My name is Carrie, and I'm an alcoholic. And my home group is New Horizons, and it is in Bend, Oregon. And I currently work steps 10, 11, and 12. I have a sponsor who has a sponsor. I sponsor women who sponsor women. And I just, you know, I've been having a really off day. So I want to just put this out there right from the get. Spent 2.5 hours at the DMV today with a 15-year-old who had to leave crying because she failed her driving test again. So, and that's just the beginning of a bunch. So I hope that you guys can bear with me while I ask this question. And I know I've asked it before, but I really don't remember where we left off. And I've been reading this. I'm thinking it was around page 33. So David's saying yes. So I'm going to go ahead and, okay. So I'm going to go ahead and, assume that we already read, about the man of 30. So just in case we didn't, and I'm not remembering right, this man of 30, you know, he was doing a great deal of spree drinking. This is on page 32. And it scared him, right? So he decided, okay, I'm not going to drink anything at all. He knew that he had the allergy. He just didn't know about the obsession and whatever, right? So he knew he had the allergy, and he says, okay, I'm going to stop until I'm done with my career because it's getting, you know, it's getting in the way of me making money and it's getting in the way of my life. And his alcoholism hadn't progressed to the point where he could stop, you know, or he couldn't stop yet. So he did stop and he remained bone dry. He didn't work a program, nothing. He stopped on willpower. And remember, if at the beginning of the page 30, it does say that there's no way of proving it, but we believe in early in our drinking careers, most of us could have stopped. But the difficulty is that few alcoholics have enough desire to stop. So while there's yet time, right? So now they're giving you an example of a guy who he didn't start drinking again until after he retired, right? And so he's like, wow, I retired. I had this amazing career. Out comes the carpet slippers and a bottle. And the guy is in the hospital again, within 2 months. You know, after remaining bone dry for, like, I think it said 40 years or something like that. So the guy is, in the hospital, and he continues to go back to the hospital. And whereas once he was able to stop with his own willpower, now he had lost that ability and he was dead within 4 years. So, that's proving that once an alcoholic, always an alcoholic. And this is now we're on page 33. I believe this is where we left off. But so commencing to drink again after, wait a minute. Okay. Yes. Commencing to drink after a period of sobriety, we are in short time as bad as ever. If we are planning to stop drinking, there must be no reservations of any kind, nor any lurking notion that someday we will be immune to alcohol. Talks about young people. This is the only place in the big book that talks about young people, except for in the stories in the back. So I like this part. It says young people may be encouraged by this man's experience to think that they can stop as he did on their own willpower. We doubt if many of them can do it because none of them will really want to stop, right? and hardly one of them, because of the particular mental twist already acquired, will find that he can win out. So several of our crowd, men of 30 or less, that's what they're diagnosing as young people, had been drinking only a few years, but they found themselves as helpless as those who had been drinking 20 years. To be gravely affected, one does not necessarily have to drink for a long time, nor take the quantities some of us have. And this is, I kind of feel like I talked about this last week, but I'll just go with it. So that line right there, and this is my highlight, does not necessarily have to drink a long time, nor take the quantities some of us have. When I was new and I was looking at the differences instead of the similarities, although that wasn't my intent, but that's just kind of naturally what we do so that we can unqualify ourselves and don't have to be, you know, I mean, this isn't really a goal of someone to end up in AA, right? So this guy said to me after I was done, he was an old timer. Whew, and I sure am glad for those old timers at my first home group that cared more about my life than my feelings. He wasn't afraid to crosstalk me. I was maybe, I don't know. I'll call it sharing. I was probably whining, but I was talking and talking about how, I'm different. It's not the same for me because you guys might have drank 40 years. I'm only 30 years old myself right now, Oh, you guys have to drink when you first wake up in the morning. I don't drink in the morning. Like, I'm not physically addicted. I don't go through the DTs. I'm different. I'm different. I'm different. Right. Well, the guy says, he waited for me to get done with my share. he didn't interrupt. He was a gentleman, Hank. And he says, look, little girl, doesn't matter how many years you've been drinking for. It doesn't matter how much you drink when you drink. It doesn't matter how often you drink when you drink. The one thing that matters is what happens when you drink. And that is what makes you an alcoholic. And he took me here in the book and he showed me this, right? Because I have an allergy. I have an abnormal reaction to alcohol. It's not an addiction. It's an abnormal reaction to this one substance, to where once I start drinking, I get thirsty. I don't get quenched. Right? Like I start drinking and I don't stop until I run out, blackout, or pass out. And that is the allergy that it's describing here. Now, once I stop because I've ran out, blacked out, or passed out, I can't stay stopped. And that's what the second part of this, that's what this, the next couple of stories are going to be talking about is without a spiritual awakening as the result of the steps. And what this part of this chapter is doing from this until the end of the chapter is it's trying to talk the reader, okay, into why they would need to do steps 2 through 12, right? They're saying, yeah, you're allergic, but you're also suffer from a mental obsession that means you can't stop without a spiritual awakening. And so the rest of the stories, it says, as we look back, we feel, and then, now I'm on page 34. As we look back, we feel as we have gone on drinking many years beyond the point where we could quit on our own willpower. If anyone questions whether he has entered this dangerous area, let him try leaving liquor alone for a year. If he's a real alcoholic and very far advanced, there's scant chance of that of success. In the early days of our drinking, we occasionally remain sober for a year or more, becoming serious drinkers again later. Though you may be able to stop for a considerable period, you may yet be a potential alcoholic. We think few to whom this book will appeal can stay dry anything like a year. Some will be drunk the next day after making resolutions, most of them within a few weeks. That was always my story. For those who are unable to drink moderately, the question is how to stop altogether. Well, we are assuming, of course, the reader desires to stop. Whether such a person can quit upon a non-spiritual basis depends upon the extent to which he has already lost the power of choice, whether he will drink or not. Many of us felt that we had plenty of character. There was a tremendous urge to cease forever, yet we found it impossible. This is the baffling feature of alcoholism as we know it. This utter inability to leave it alone, no matter how great the necessity or the wish. And that's the obsession, right? Like I could wake up the next morning and swear it off forever and mean it. You guys, I could pass a lie detector test that I will never drink again. And for some reason, I end up drunk again. That is the baffling feature of alcoholism. How then shall we try to help our readers determine to their own satisfaction what they whether they are one of us? The experiment of quitting for a period of time will be helpful, but we think that we can render an even greater service to alcoholic sufferers and perhaps to the medical fraternity. Now I'm on page 35. So we shall describe some of the mental states that precede a relapse into drinking. So the mental neck up is what precedes the first drink. The physical neck down, the phenomenon of craving, only happens after we take that first drink. For obviously, this is the crux of the problem. They're saying the mental state that precedes that first drink is the actual problem. Because if that didn't happen, we would never pick up a drink again. We would go, wow, I got in a lot of trouble the last time I drank alcohol. I'm not going to drink again. And then everything will be fine and live happily ever after. Like somebody with a peanut allergy. They don't obsess over peanuts. That's the baffling feature of alcoholism, the absolute inability to leave it alone, as the previous page put it. So what sort of thinking dominates an alcoholic who repeats time after time the desperate experiment of that first drink, right? I talk about it like getting in the ring with King Alcohol. The desperate experiment of that first drink, time after time, King Alcohol wins, you know, knocks me out. I am out cold, but guess what? I don't tap out. I'm up for round two. I'm up for round three. I'm up for round four, and I don't tap out. I don't know how to tap out. That's the baffling feature of alcoholism. So friends who have reasoned with him after a spree, which has brought him to the point of divorce or bankruptcy, are mystified when he walks directly into a saloon. Why does he? Of what is he thinking? Well, our first example is a friend we shall call Jim. This man has a charming wife and family. He inherited a lucrative automobile agency. He had a commendable World War record. He is a salesman. Everybody likes him. He's an intelligent man, normal as far as we can see, except for a nervous disposition. He did no drinking until he was 35. In a few years, he became so violent when intoxicated that he had to be committed. On leaving the asylum, he came into contact with us. And I like that Jim's story has the fact that he never even drank until he was 35 years old, right? This isn't an addiction. He didn't drink, you know, but once he started, it was on. We told him what we knew of alcoholism and the answer we had found. He made a beginning. His family was reassembled and he began to work as a salesman for the business that he lost through drinking. All went well for a time, but he failed to enlarge his spiritual life. That's what this part of the book is trying to talk the reader into seeing, that they need to do steps 2 through 12, that I need the rest of the program, or else I'll end up drunk. So to his consternation, he found himself drunk a half a dozen times in rapid succession. On each of these occasions, we worked with him, reviewing carefully what had happened. He agreed that he was a real alcoholic and in a serious condition. He knew he'd face another trip to the asylum if he kept on. Moreover, he would lose his family, for whom he had deep affection. Yet he got drunk again. We asked him to tell us exactly what happened. This is his story. Well, I came to work on Tuesday. I remembered I felt irritated that I had been that I had to be a salesman for a concern I once owned. Resentment, right? I had a few words with the boss, but nothing serious. I decided to drive into the country to see one of my prospects for a car. On the way, I felt hungry, so I stopped at a roadside place where they have a bar. I had no intention of drinking. That is highlighted in my book, and I'll tell you why in a minute. I had no intention of drinking. I just thought I would get a sandwich. I also had the notion that I might find a customer for a car at that place, which I was familiar with because I had been going there for years. I had eaten there many times during the months I was sober. I sat down at the table and ordered a sandwich and a glass of milk. Here's another highlight. Still, no thought of drinking. I ordered another sandwich and decided to have another glass of milk. Suddenly, the thought crossed my mind. Happened that quick. You see that? Like that paragraph, no thought of drinking, still no thought of drinking. And now, suddenly, the thought crossed my mind. If I were to put an ounce of whiskey into milk, it couldn't hurt me on a full stomach. I ordered a whiskey and poured it into the milk. I vaguely sensed that I was not being too smart, but felt reassured as I was taking the whiskey with a full stomach. Now notice how those are italics. The pre-step two that is demonstrating the insanity of alcoholism is in italics in this chapter. So if you look at that, that is pretty insane. That's alcoholic insanity. when it just hits like that out of nowhere. I had no intention of drinking, still no thought of drinking. And then suddenly the thought crossed my mind that I was going to put whiskey in milk, like straight up alcoholic insanity right there. I mean, it's a perfect demonstration. So the experiment went so well. Now, the reason why this is not highlighted is because this is the phenomenon of craving that is kicking in. The phenomenon of craving is not what we're talking about anymore. That was in the first half of the chapter. So now we're talking about just the mental obsession. And so after he, you know, took the drink, now he's not drinking to escape. Remember doctor's opinion. He's drinking to overcome a craving beyond his mental control. Now it's physical, neck down. So this experiment went so well that I ordered another whiskey and I poured it into more milk. That didn't seem to bother me. So I tried another because the craving is on. The physical aspect has him now. Thus started one more journey to the asylum for Jim. Here was the threat of commitment. Oh, here was the threat of commitment, the loss of family and position, to say nothing of the intense mental and physical, if you guys are highlighting the mental and physical throughout this book, there's another one, suffering, which drinking always caused him. This must be more insanity. Let's see what it sounds like. He had much knowledge about himself as an alcoholic, yet all reasons for not drinking were easily pushed aside in favor of the foolish idea that he could take whiskey if only he mixed it with milk. Yep, straight up insanity again. Whatever the precise definition of the word may be, we call this plain insanity. How can such a lack of proportion of the ability to think straight be called anything else? You may think this is an extreme case. To us, it's not so far-fetched, for this is the kind of thinking that has been characteristics of every single one of us. We have sometimes reflected more than Jim did upon the consequences, but there was always the curious mental phenomenon that paralleled with our sound reasoning. Their reasoning inevitably ran some insanely trivial excuse for taking that first drink, right? Because that's the insanity, what precedes that first drink. Not the 10th drink, not the third drink, that first drink. Our sound reasoning failed to hold us in check. The insane idea won out. Next day, we would ask ourselves in all earnestness, and I'm on page 37, and sincerity, how could it have happened? In some circumstances, we've gone out and deliberately got drunk. I call that the F it drinkers. I was never an F it drinker, not even toward the end. Like, I never drank because of F you. I never drank at anybody. A lot of people do. It was just not my story. I always used to drink because, I guess I drank anytime. I guess I didn't really have a reason to let it drink. But so this is talking about the F it drinker, I guess. Let's see. In some circumstances, we've gone out and deliberately got drunk, feeling ourselves justified by nervousness, anger, worry, depression, jealousy, or the like. But even in this type of beginning, we are obliged to admit that our justification for a spree was insanely insufficient in the light of what always happened. We now see that when we began to drink deliberately instead of casually, there was little serious effect or effective thought during the period of pre-meditation, right, preceding the first drink, of the terrific consequences might be. Our behavior is absurd and incomprehensible with respect to the first drink as that of an individual with a passion for, say, jaywalking. Now we're going to talk about the jaywalker. He gets a thrill out of skipping in front of fast-moving vehicles. He enjoys himself for a few years in spite of a few friendly warnings. Up to this point, you would label him a foolish chap, having queer ideas of fun. Luck then deserts him, and he is slightly injured several times in succession. You would expect him, if he were normal, to cut it out. Presently, he is hit again, and this time has a fractured skull. Within a week after leaving the hospital, a fast-moving trolley car breaks his arm. He tells you that he's decided to stop jaywalking for good, but in a few weeks, he breaks both legs. On through the years, this conduct continues, accompanied by his continual promises to be careful or to keep off the streets altogether. Finally, he can no longer work. His wife gets a divorce and he's held up to ridicule. He tries every known means to get the jaywalking idea out of his head. He shuts himself up in an asylum, hoping to mend his ways. But the day he comes out, he races in front of a fire engine, which breaks his back. Such a man would be crazy, wouldn't he? I'm on page 38. You may think our illustration is too ridiculous, but is it? We who have been through the ringer have to admit, if we substituted alcoholism for jaywalking, the illustration would fit exactly. However intelligent, and this is another highlight, however intelligent we may have been in other respects, where alcohol had been involved, we've been strangely insane. It's strong language, but isn't it true? Some of you are thinking, yes, well, what you tell us is true, but it doesn't fully apply. We admit we have some of these symptoms, but we have not gone to the extremes you fellows did, nor are we likely, for we understand ourselves so well after what you've told us that such things couldn't happen again. We have not lost everything in life through our drinking, and we certainly don't intend to. Thank you for the information. Well, that may be true of certain non-alcoholic people who, through drinking foolishly and heavily at the present time, are able to stop or moderate because their brains and bodies have not been damaged as ours were. But the actual or potential alcoholic, with hardly an exception, will be absolutely unable to stop drinking on the basis of self-knowledge. Self-knowledge avails us nothing. This is a point we wish to emphasize and re-emphasize. Like throughout this whole first 44 pages, it's describing the physical allergy, neck down, and the neck up, the mental obsession. And it's talking about, right, like Jim. It's talking about the jaywalker. It's talking about the man, you know, with the carpet slippers. It's talking about all these, but like they really want to drive this home. And it's almost like, okay, I get it. It's twofold. But it's saying here, this at this point, we wish to emphasize and reemphasize, to smash home upon our alcoholic readers, as it has been revealed to us out of bitter experience. Let us take another illustration. It's like, oh my God, really? Another one? So let's talk about Fred. Fred is a partner in a well-known accounting firm. His income is good. He has a fine home, is happily married, and the father of a promising children of college age. He has so attractive of a personality that he makes friends with everyone. If ever there was a successful businessman, it is Fred. To all appearance, he is stable, well-balanced individual. Yet, he's an alcoholic. We first saw Fred about a year ago in a hospital where he had gone to recover from a bad case of jitters. It was his first experience of this kind, and he was much ashamed of it. Far from admitting he was an alcoholic, he told himself he came to the hospital to rest his nerves. The doctor admitted him, intimated strongly that he might be worse than he realized. For a few days, he was depressed about his condition. He made up his mind to quit drinking altogether. It never occurred to him that perhaps he could not do so in spite of his character and standing. Fred would not believe himself an alcoholic, much less accept spiritual remedy for his problem. Now, this is one of the first places that it's talking about the spiritual remedy. Whenever it talks about the spiritual side of this, it talks about the spiritual solution, the spiritual remedy, because that is the spiritual solution is pretty much the only one we have here in Alcoholics Anonymous. We told him what we knew of alcoholism. He was interested and conceded that he had some of the symptoms, but he was a long way from admitting that he could do nothing about it himself. He was positive that this humiliating experience, plus the knowledge that he had acquired, could keep him sober the rest of his life. Self-knowledge would fix it. We heard no more of Fred for a while. One day we were told that he was back in the hospital. This time he was quite shaky. He soon indicated that he was nervous to see us. Anxious to see us, sorry. The story he told is most instructive. For there was a chap absolutely convinced he had to stop drinking, who had no excuse for drinking, who exhibited splendid judgment and determination in all other concerns, yet he was flat on his back nevertheless. Let him tell you about it. Well, I was much impressed with what you fellows said about alcoholism, and I frankly did not believe it would be possible for me to drink again. I rather appreciated your ideas about the subtle insanity that precedes, here's another highlight, subtle insanity always precedes that first drink, right? But I was confident it couldn't happen to me after what I had learned. I reasoned I was not as far advanced as most of you fellows, that I had been usually successful at licking my other personal problems, and that I would therefore be successful where you men failed. I felt I had every right to be self-confident, that it would be only a matter of exercising my willpower and keeping on guard. Bottom of page 40. In this frame of mind, I went about my business, and for a time, all was well. I had no trouble refusing drinks and began to wonder if I had not been making too hard of work for a simple matter. One day, I went to Washington to present some accounting evidence to a government bureau, top of page 41. I had been out of town before during this particular dry spell, so there was nothing new about that. Physically, I felt fine. Oh, I am so sorry. That is terrible that I did that. Physically, I felt fine. Neither did I have any pressing problems or worries. My business came off well. I was pleased, and I knew my partners would be too. It was the end of a perfect day, not a cloud on the horizon. Let's just stop for a minute and talk about that. I got drunk because my grandma died. I got drunk because my husband left. I got drunk because I got my house taken away and I can't pay the mortgage. I got drunk because he cheated on me. Okay. But it was the end of a perfect day, not a cloud on the horizon. And alcoholics of my type, we still get drunk. A trigger? Tuesday is a trigger. So I went to my hotel and leisurely dressed for dinner. As I crossed the threshold of the dining room, the thought crossed my mind, and again, remember the italics in this second part of this chapter mean insanity, alcoholic insanity, right? So the thought came to mind that it would be nice to have a couple of cocktails with dinner. That was all. And I love the way that "that was all, nothing more" is in italics too, because that is insanity when you know what you know about Fred, right? Like when Fred knows what he knows about himself, this is insanity. I ordered a cocktail and my meal. Then I ordered another cocktail. After dinner, I decided to take a walk. When I returned to the hotel, it struck me that a highball would be fine before going to bed. So I stepped into the bar and I had one. I remember having several more that night and plenty the next morning. I have a shadowy recollection of being in an airplane bound for New York. This is how I drink, you guys. And finding a friendly taxi cab driver at the landing instead of my wife. Oh, good Lord. The driver escorted me about for several days. I know little of where I went or what I said or did. Then came the hospital with unbearable mental and physical, there's that twofold again, mental and physical suffering. As soon as I regained my ability to think, I went carefully over that evening in Washington. Not only had I'd been off guard, I had made no fight, and this is against insanity, alcoholic insanity. I had made no fight whatever against that first drink. This time I had not thought about the consequences at all. I had commenced to drink carelessly as though the cocktails were ginger ale. I now remembered what my alcoholic friends had told me and how they prophesized that I had an alcoholic mind. I have that alcoholic mind highlighted because everything up to page 44 is showing me that I have to do steps 2 through 12 so that I don't have an alcoholic mind anymore. And if you hear in meetings, people who have 20 years of sobriety talking about their alcoholic mind. I mean, pray for them, you know, maybe be ready to do the steps with them if they ask. But this program offers a solution to that alcoholic mind. And again, by the time we get to page 20, 101, you know, and I'll just skip forward real quick. By the time we get to page 101, which is in the 12th step, right? We've worked the steps. We've had a spiritual awakening. The problem has been removed. It says we meet these conditions every day. An alcoholic who cannot meet them still has an alcoholic mind. And that is not what the goal is. The goal is not to live sick and suffering every day for the rest of my life, white knuckling it from one meeting to another. The goal is to be restored to sanity. So if I had an alcoholic mind, the time and place would come where I would drink again. They had said that, though I didn't raise a defense, it would one day give way before some trivial reason for having a drink. And this would have been me. I mean, if I still was suffering from an alcoholic mind, I would be drunk time and time again, because I have no mental defense against that first drink. None. Well, just that did happen and more. For what I learned of alcoholism did not occur to me at all. I knew from that moment that I had an alcoholic mind. I saw that willpower and self-knowledge would not help me in those strange mental blank spots. I had never been able to understand people who said the problem had been had them hopelessly defeated. I knew then. It was a crushing blow. Two of the members of Alcoholics Anonymous came to me. They grinned, which I didn't like so much, and then asked me if I thought myself an alcoholic and if I was really licked this time. I had to concede both propositions. They piled on heaps of evidence to the effect that an alcoholic mentality such as I had exhibited in Washington was a hopeless condition. They cited cases out of their own experience by the dozen. This process snuffed out the last flicker of conviction that I could do the job for myself. Then they outlined the spiritual answer, the spiritual solution, and program of action, which 100 of them had followed successfully. Though I had only been a nominal churchman, their proposals were not intellectually hard to swallow, but the program of action, though entirely sensible, was pretty drastic. Simple, not easy, right? It meant I would have to throw several lifelong conceptions out the window. That was not easy. But the moment I made up my mind to go through with the process, I had a curious feeling that my alcoholic condition was relieved. And in fact, it proved to be. We are thousands of men and women who have recovered from alcoholism. This book is the story of how 100 men and women recovered from alcoholism. I had the curious feeling that my alcoholic condition was relieved, and in fact, it proved to be. Quite as important was the discovery that spiritual principles would solve all my problems. I have since been brought into a way of living infinitely, infinitely more satisfying, and I hope more useful than the life I lived before. My old manner of living was by no means a bad one, but I would not change its best moments for the worst I have now. I would not go back even if I could. Fred's story speaks for itself. We hope it strikes home to thousands like him. He had felt only the first nip of the ringer. Most alcoholics have to be pretty badly mangled before they really commence to solve their problems. Many doctors and psychiatrists agree with our conclusions. One of these men, staff member for a world-renowned hospital, recently made this statement to some of us. What you say about the general hopelessness of the average alcoholic's plight is, in my opinion, correct. As two of you men, whose stories I have heard, there is no doubt in my mind that you were 100% hopeless, apart from divine help. The alcoholic of the hopeless variety, right? If you offered yourselves as patients at this hospital, I would have not taken you if I could have been, if I had been able to avoid it. People like you are too heartbreaking. Though not a religious person, I have a profound respect for the spiritual approach in such cases as yours. For most cases, there is virtually no other solution. Once more, the alcoholic at certain times has no, once more, it's saying, even though we've driven home time and time and time and time and time and time and time again in this chapter to where we're getting sick of hearing it, once more, I'm going to say it one more time. The alcoholic at certain times has no effective mental defense against the first drink. I have that highlighted. Except in a few rare cases, neither he nor any other human being can provide such a defense. His defense must come from a higher power. Hence, the next chapter, chapter 4. This is where we get to start talking about the solution, right? So the first 44 pages plus the doctor's opinion is all step one and getting you ready for step two, right? So this is the third and final place that I take people to as the qualifying page when I'm working with a new person and they're trying to figure out if they're an alcoholic or not. This first paragraph has two sentences, has two questions on it. So we agnostic. In the preceding chapters, you have learned something about alcoholism. God, I hope so, right? Because they're telling us about Jim and about Fred and about Jay Walker and about the guy with the carpet slippers. And it's like over and over and over and over again. We hope that we have made clear the distinction between the alcoholic and the non-alcoholic. If when you honestly want to, you find you cannot quit entirely, or if when drinking, you have little control over the amount you take, you are probably alcoholic. If that be the case, you may be suffering from an illness which only a spiritual experience will conquer. So now we get to talk about the spiritual experience. So the first 44 pages plus the doctor's opinion, that talks about the problem, right? That talks about the twofold. That talks about the neck up obsession of the mind that tells me drink, drink, drink 24/7. The alcoholic mind and the physical allergy that once I start drinking, I can't stop and all bets are off. Now, from this point on for the next two chapters, it's not going to talk about alcohol. It's going to talk about our human problems and our human conditions, which are dubious luxuries of normal men. But for us, the alcoholic, these things are poison and resentment and all of these things that we're going to talk about will lead me back to a drink. So one who feels he is atheist or agnostic, so, you know, and I'm not going to, so here's what I do. I'm going to just quickly reference this. When I go through this work with a new person and I'm walking someone else through this work, we do go through the first 103 pages, pretty much word for word, line by line, page by page. With the exception of we agnostic. Now, this is something personal for me, and everybody has to, you know, there's no wrong way to 12 step. There's no wrong way to take someone through the book, right? Tradition 9 says AA as such ought never be organized. As such is 12 step work. The way I do it, and I don't know if you guys have seen or have noticed that I'm animated. My voice goes up and down. I talk with my hands. I'm a strong personality. And this step, step two, I feel is so spiritual and so personal that it's the only one that I will say, because step two is we agnostics. For those who are new or nearly new, we agnostics, the chapter that we're about to start on, skim through, is it's step two. There's the meat and the potatoes of step two, and we'll go to, but pretty much the whole chapter is step two. And I don't want my idea of a higher power, my conviction to rub off on somebody else who's trying to find their own. Because I have had a really, really good sponsorship. I've been blessed with a sponsor who I meet face to face with her every week for an hour a week, you know. So this was at about, I don't know, maybe 4 years that I had been working with my current sponsor. Now I've been with her for like 9 years, but it was at about a 4 year point in time that I had been meeting with my current sponsor face to face every single week. I had been going to meetings with her 3 times a week, and I'm meeting with her and she's wearing a necklace with a symbol on it. And I said, "What is that?" And she goes, oh my gosh, I didn't know I had that out. And she put it under her shirt. And I said, "I didn't know you were." My sponsor is very dedicated to her faith. And I had no idea what that was for 4 years, because she doesn't, it's not her job to tell me what to believe. It's her job to show me how to believe in what my higher power is, to take me down that path. And I feel so blessed after knowing how dedicated to her faith she is and how very little I've heard about it. It's amazing. And she's been able to help me get a deeper understanding of my higher power, which is not the same as hers, through this work. And that's what I want to give others. And you know, my sponsor is not as animated as me. My sponsor is not as strong personality as me. And so she could probably do this with the women that she takes through the work. I know that my convictions are my convictions. And so I don't want to alter anybody's path. You know, I don't want to put anything in their head. It's not my job to tell you what your higher power is. It's my job to help you to get closer to your own personal higher power. So what I do in this chapter is I have the person I'm working with go through it on their own or with a study buddy, either way, fine by me, and highlight the parts that stick out to them. And then we meet up and we go over those highlights, not the ones that are personal to me, the ones that are personal to them. And then I go over the instructional highlights. So there's, you know, in this chapter, there's not too many instructional highlights. It's the one chapter in the whole, you know, first 103 pages out of the 12 steps that really have the fewest instructions. So I'm going to go over my instructional highlights with you guys and not my personal ones for the reason that I just explained. Okay. So let's go to page 46, second paragraph down. Yet we have not agnostic temperament, have had these thoughts and experiences. Let us make haste to reassure you. We found that as soon as we were able to lay aside prejudice and express even a willingness, so even a willingness is highlighted in here, and I'll tell you why in a minute, to believe in a power greater than ourselves, we commenced to get results, even though it was impossible for any of us to fully define or comprehend that power, which is God. Much to our relief, we discovered we did not need to consider another's conception of God. That's why I try not to go through this with my big personality and my facial expressions. Our own conception, however inadequate, was sufficient to make the approach and to effect a contact with him. As soon as we admitted the possible existence of a creative intelligent, a spirit of the universe, underlining the totality of things, we began to be possessed of a new sense of power and direction. We began to be possessed with a new sense of power. This whole book is about finding power. I love, you know, Chris R. says powerless. I haven't been powerless over alcohol forever. And I know that that's a huge turnoff to a lot of people in this room, because they're thinking, oh my God, Carrie is going to drink. She doesn't think she's powerless over alcohol. I'm not powerless over alcohol today. I don't have the mental obsession to tell me to drink. I, you know, that's why I have the steps, a whole, a new power has flowed in, right? It's not my power, but I have it. It's in me. I found it deep down within, right? Isn't that what this work says? So we found that God does not make too hard of terms with them, with those who seek him. To us, the realm of the spirit is broad, roomy, all-inclusive, never exclusive or forbidding to those who earnestly seek. It is open, we believe, to all men. So therefore, when we speak of to you of God, we mean your own conception of God. This applies to other spiritual expressions, which you will find in this book. Do not let any prejudice you, or do not let any prejudice you may have against spiritual terms deter you from honestly seeking what they mean to you. At the start, this was all we needed to commence spiritual growth, to affect our first conscious relation with God as we understood him. Afterward, we found ourselves accepting many things which then seemed entirely out of reach. That was growth, but if we wished to grow, we had to begin somewhere. So we used our own conception, however limited it was. Now, this is the step, this is step two, the actual step two, the meat and the potatoes of step two, this paragraph. We needed to ask ourselves but one short question. Now, remember, on the previous page, we highlighted even a willingness. And that's because it led us up to this. Do I now believe, or am I even willing to believe, that there's a power greater than myself? As soon as a man can say that he does believe, or is even willing to believe, we empathetically assure him that he's on his way. Now, what if this paragraph read something like this? We ask ourselves but one short question. Do I now believe there's a power greater than myself? As soon as a man can say that he does believe, we empathetically assure him that he's on his way. That is the way it was going to read in the very beginning, in the first, the original manuscript. But thank God that Jimmy Burwell and Hank Parkhurst and those people wanted the door open wide for everybody. So it was added, or am I even willing to believe, right? Or is he even willing to believe over and over again? And if I'm just willing, I only have to be willing to believe, then I can move forward. That's what this instructions are saying to me. It has been repeatedly proven among us that upon this simple cornerstone, now remember in the first step, Bill talks about willingness being the foundation, right? So the first step is the foundation stone. Second step, cornerstone. And then when we get to the third step, I'll point out the highlight that talks about the keystone through which we, because we're building an arch through which we walk a free man, you know, and so that path that we walk through on the other side of that arch is the rest of the steps. And Bill was very architectural minded in his writing, but that's the cornerstone. And it's funny because it says cornerstone twice. That's the first time it's saying it. So a wonderful effect, spiritual, this has been repeatedly proven among us that upon this simple cornerstone, a wonderfully effective spiritual structure can be built. And now there's an asterisk. That asterisk is telling us to go back to appendix two, but we read that last week. So we're not going to read it on all four of the asterisks that tell us to go and read it again, because we already read it. That's the spiritual experience in the back of the book. That was great news to us, for we had assumed we could not make use of spiritual experiences unless we accepted many things on faith, which seemed difficult to believe. When people presented us with spiritual approaches, how frequently did we say, I wish I had what that man has. I'm sure it would work if I could only believe as he believes, but I cannot accept as surely true the many articles of faith which are plain to him. So it was comforting to learn that we could commence at a simpler level. That was comforting to me. I needed that. So there's one highlight on page 48 that I have. And it's just a highlight that I have to keep on highlighting throughout this entire book. It's one of those constants that come up every couple of pages, but I need to remember this. Faced with alcoholic destruction, we soon became as open-minded on spiritual matters as we had tried to be on other questions. In this respect, alcohol, John Barleycorn, was a great persuader. I have to remember that, especially when I'm sponsoring others. I can't persuade. I can give direction. I can give suggestion. I can give experience, strength, hope. I can't give willingness. I can't give willingness. That has to come from pain, right? John Barleycorn, King Alcohol. That's the great persuader. It finally beat us into a state of reasonableness. That was my case. Sometimes this was a tedious process. We hope no one will be prejudiced for as long as some of us were. I'm going to go to the second step promises. We're at the bottom of page 50. In the face of collapse and despair, in the face of the total failure of their human resources, they found that a new power, peace, happiness, and sense of direction flowed into them. This happened as soon as they wholeheartedly met a few simple suggestions. Oh, sorry. Requirements. I love how many times this book uses the word requirement. So there's another requirement right there, right? So then let's visit the bedevilments real quick. That's on page 52. So the bedevilments are in, you know, we agnostics, because yes, obviously when we put down the drink, and it's right in the middle of page 52, when we put down the drink, I can't speak for anybody else. I know that when I put down the drink, that's when I started getting more crazy. And that's when I started thinking, like, I guess having the real life experience about, oh my God, like, I guess alcohol wasn't the problem. It was the solution. And now that the solution is gone, whoa, like, it's like pouring gasoline on all of my character defects. Because I had no solution to bring me back down. I remember at the beginning of this workshop, I think I said I would, you know, I never liked drugs or anything because I was born high. Like, I drank to bring me back down, you know, like, whoo. and that's the bedevilments are when you take the alcohol away from an alcoholic, you're left with the ick. I'm sure you guys have heard that. I'm going to read them in that sense, because that's what they're doing here in this, at this portion of the book, is they're talking us into needing to take the rest of the steps. So we were having, we had to ask ourselves, why wouldn't we apply it to the same human problems? Because these are not alcoholic defects. Remember, these are human defects, the same readiness to change our point of view. We were having trouble with personal relationships. That's the first bedevilment. We couldn't control our nature, our emotional natures. We were prey to misery and depression. We couldn't make a living. We had a feeling of uselessness. We were full of fear. We were unhappy. We couldn't seem to be of real help to other people. So I don't know if you guys heard what I heard in that. They're not just the reason I need to have a spiritual awakening, but they're also the opposite of the ninth step promises. They're the flip side of the coin from the ninth step promises. And the ninth step promises can be found on page 84. Well, they start on the bottom of 83. But so real quick, after listening to me read the bedevilments, listen to me read the ninth step promises. Because by the time, like right now, when you're at page 52 in the book, most of the time we are suffering from not being able to control our natures. We were prey to misery and depression. We couldn't make a living. We were having feelings of uselessness, full of fear. We were unhappy. We couldn't seem to be of real help to other people. By the time we do the work that is like literally only about 30 pages, right? Then this stuff starts happening. If we are painstaking about this phase of our development, and this phase of our development is not our 90th meeting on our 90th day. It's not graduating from the treatment facility. It's doing the work 1 through 9 up until page 83. So if we are painstaking about this phase of our development, where we are in the step work, we will be amazed before we're halfway through. No, not halfway through with the program. There's no halfway through with the program. It's halfway through with your ninth step amends, okay? We are going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. That's the opposite of what the bedevilments are. We will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. We will comprehend the word serenity and we will know peace. These are the opposite. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see that our experience can benefit others instead of being useless to others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We lose interest in selfish things and we gain interest in others, in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude upon an outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and economic insecurity will leave us. We intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. These are the things that are the opposite of the bedevilments. And I know, as having worked this and having gone through this process today, it's so funny that when I'm resting on my laurels, which for me means I'm not taking the action required of me in steps 10, 11, and 12 on a daily basis. If I start resting on my laurels, I don't see the ninth step promises slipping away. I don't notice that. What I notice is the flip side of the coin. I notice these red flags on page 52. That's what I notice. I notice, oh my gosh, I'm starting to have trouble with my personal relationships. Where am I going wrong? Oh, it's been 3 days since I meditated. You know, like, these are red flags for me. So this is a good spot check, getting off my spiritual beam kind of inventory for me, those bedevilments. So I want to read one more thing. Right down below that, it says, we saw that others solved their problems by simple reliance upon the spirit of the universe. We had to stop doubting the power of God. Our ideas didn't work, but the God idea did. And for those of you struggling with the God idea, it doesn't say our ideas didn't work, but God did. It says, but the God idea did, right? It's just a choice. If you don't believe, pretend you believe, right? It's an idea. And that's all we need to start. That's it. Just the willingness to believe. Just the willingness. So I'm going to stop there and go to questions.
Thank you so much, Carrie, as always, every week. I haven't received any questions yet in the chat, so please, you guys, go ahead and send them in to me now, and I will go ahead and ask them to Carrie. As we said before, unfortunately, we can't unmute everyone because Florida is a two-way to consent to record state, so I will go ahead and ask the questions for you guys. But we'll give a couple minutes, Carrie, to see if who sends in questions.
I'll just continue for a couple more minutes because the next page on 53 in the middle kind of, it finishes my thought that I was just saying. It says, hence, we are at pains to tell why we think our present faith is reasonable, why we think it's more sane and logical to believe than to not believe. So if this is a choice, right? Why we say our former thinking was soft and mushy when we threw up our hands in doubt and said, we don't know. Well, when we became alcoholics, crushed by self-imposed crisis, we would not postpone or evade. We had to fearlessly face the proposition that either God is everything or else he is nothing. Either God is or he isn't. What is our choice to be? And it leaves it, you know, kind of that simple for me.
Thanks, Carrie. Okay, I have some questions now. Ready?
Yes.
How do you feel about secular AA? Is it possible to recover without the God piece?
I mean, I'm not gonna, I guess that's not, I base all of what I say, this is just a rule of thumb for me, if you don't do it, that's fine, but on the literature. And so what AA conference approved literature tells me is that it's not a religious program. It's not a God program. It's a spiritual program. And whether I call that the spirit of the universe or whatever, you know, the program is spiritual. It's not like a piece of it is spiritual that you can like work around. The entire program is spiritual, like every single one of our 12 steps. And for me personally, being in a 12-step fellowship without working the steps, without working the 12 steps is, well, that's just plain insanity too. I don't know, but I've done that though. I have joined a gym and I've paid $325 for a year. I had a membership, but I didn't work out. So there's that.
Thanks, Carrie. All right. They said, someone asked, please review second step prayer again.
I don't think I had a second step prayer in what I read today. There was the second step promises or the bedevilments or the actual second step. And those are on pages. The second step, meat and potatoes, is in the middle of page 47. The second step promises are at the bottom of page 50, and the bedevilments are in the middle of page 52.
Awesome. Thank you so much. And we're at, okay, so somebody's asking how many more weeks do we have in this workshop? We're on week 5, right? Okay. I just want to make sure. Out of 13. That's all the questions today. Oh, wait. Now they're coming in. Do you ever take a sponsee through step 3 twice if they didn't seem sincere enough to themselves?
I haven't yet. I'm not unwilling. It just hasn't happened that I needed to yet. I haven't worked, honestly, I haven't really, up until just recently, I haven't worked with anybody through all 12 steps who went on and worked with someone else on the 12 steps who has drank up until recently. So really, I mean, there's really no need to unless you're coming back. And the woman who I was working with before, who did drink, you know, if she wants my help again, then obviously she's definitely going to have to do a first step and the second step and the third step again. So yeah, that would be the case.
Okay. So this question is coming from someone who is very, very new. And they're saying, I am so overwhelmed by the fact that AA seems to work for so many alcoholics, though, by looking at it the hard way. And I just feel like I just feel like getting drunk again. I just want to say for that person to stay and hold on tight. And I feel like that's what you would say too.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And, you know, although we don't stay sober one day at a time after you work the steps, believe me, I do not stay sober one day at a time. I'm actually up to 72 hours at a time. No, I'm joking. But I have plans through Christmas, right? And there was a time in my life that I couldn't do that. But in the beginning, when I was just trying to get 30 days, which was my biggest accomplishment in Alcoholics Anonymous, because I was doing that on 100% human power. Because I was not relieved of my obsession to drink. It wasn't just one day at a time. It was 1 minute at a time. And that's where those phone lists come in. That's where lots of meetings come in. And hopefully, you know, if you get a good sponsor who's willing to take you through this work, then you won't feel like that forever. You won't feel like that forever. And, you know, and I'm here to tell you, and if you go to a lot of meetings, you will hear stuff like somebody takes a 20-year cake and like they are asked how they did it. And they say, oh, well, I just don't drink one day at a time. And that's not the case. I don't want to drink today. The problem has been removed. If I was still white knuckling it from one meeting to the next, one day at a time, and I still felt like you feel today, I couldn't do it. So I promise you that that goes away. That's what the steps are for. You don't have to live like this.
Thanks, Carrie. All right. The next question says, the faced with alcoholic destruction, we soon became as open-minded on spiritual matters. Means a rock bottom, right? Is rock bottom a fellowship concept, or is it in the big book?
I don't know anywhere that says rock bottom anywhere in our literature, but it doesn't make it a bad thing. I think that we all have our own bottom. I don't know if mine was hit any rocks yet, but I know, I mean, for me personally, I got off the elevator before the bottom floor is the way I put it. And you know, and luckily I got in enough pain when I got out of the elevator on level two, because that floor was hell, that I got, you know, in enough pain to start doing the work, and I didn't actually have to get back in the elevator to go to the bottom floor.
All right. Thanks, Carrie. And for someone who asked how to cope with those feelings, please stay after and talk with some of our members and get some phone numbers and stay connected with people and just hold on tight. I know that feeling, and I can feel it all too well. Relatable. I have a lot of people saying, thank you, Carrie. Thank you, Carrie. Thanks, Carrie. Someone said they missed last week because they had the wrong password, but we have recordings, so you can find those at thethreeleggroup.com if you missed last week. That's all that I have for questions. I guess we can give like...
Hey, Amber, I feel like because of one of your questions, there might be an elephant in the room when the question is, how long is this workshop and what week are we on? And I just wanted to express real quick that we're on week five. It's a 13-week workshop, and you're probably going, this doesn't make sense. She's talking about step two. but let me explain. The steps are 103 pages from steps one to step 12 in the big book, plus the doctor's opinion. So that's like another 9 pages. So that's like basically 110 pages. And we're on page 55. So that's why, I mean, the first step is literally half the program.